If it's winter, it's the horror season in Hollywood, and we scared up our film critic Harlan Jacobson to talk about the latest horror entry.
Writer-director Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man is only inspired by H.G. Wells' original 1897 novel, and it's not a remake of James Whale's classic 1933 film starring a young Claude Rains as Dr. Jack Griffin, a murderous scientist. It's not about the discontents of an invisible man at all, in fact. It is anything but. Instead, Whannell's adaptation means to be up to the minute. The central idea in This Invisible Man is a woman's story. Nobody hears or believes Elizabeth Moss as Cecilia Cass when she reports being terrorized by her boyfriend. Why would they? He's dead. He committed suicide after she escaped their high-tech mansion by the sea in San Francisco, though it was filmed mostly in studio interiors in tax-supported low-budget Australia. Played by Oliver Jackson Cohn, Adrian Griffin, a nod to Wells's Griffin, is a dot-com billionaire optical genius whom Elizabeth intuits has figured out how to make himself invisible and is therefore very undead. Being invisible just allows his clingy, controlling self to get that much unbearably closer to every move she makes. Because they can't see him, she must be crazy. And thus we have the modern application of political metaphor. Cloaked inside the sci-fi genre, this invisible man is textbook Harvey Weinstein. He's stalking me, terrorizing me, flinging me around the bedroom in a sometimes horrible, sometimes slapstick sequence that no one sees or believes. Help! It's pretty clever to load the politics of Me Too onto the mechanisms of a horror film. Everyone inside this movie and out is jumpy. The film is the work of Jordan Peele's Blumhouse Productions, which financed Get Out for Peele to direct, and signed on Moss to appear in his follow-up film, Us, and to star here. To his credit, with Peele producing, Whannell is reasonably constrained in his direction of harem-scarum scenes, which could have detracted from simply psychologically terrorizing his female character. Only Cecilia and you, the audience, are in on the secret, as Cecilia stands in for getting under your skin. You believe her from the get-go because you can. While the film is called The Invisible Man, the characters in her life just think Cecilia is crazy, Hitchcock crazy, an unreliable narrator. It is, in essence, the 21st century story of being an invisible woman. In the aftermath of her escape from the home surveillance stronghold that begins the film, Cecilia flees courtesy of an escape aided by her sister, who significantly will come to doubt her sanity. Cecilia puts in at the house of her best friend James, Aldous Hodge of Clemency, and the news then carries the story of Griff and her boyfriend's suicide. So Cecilia sinks in safely to bunk in with her goddaughter, Sydney, played by Storm Reid, James' barely teenage daughter. All seems calm. Even good, as Griffin's lawyer brother calls to say his late brother's estate left her $5 million in payable chunks if she can keep her nose clean. Think she's going to be able to? That's when Cecilia is awakened by hearing something, or someone, in the room she shares with Sydney. Here we'll compress the long buildup of C, as James calls her, straining to listen for some bumps in the night, to the moment when she knows the invisible but not so dead Griffin is in the room.
James! James! James!
Yeah, what happened? What happened? What?
I saw something. It's right there. They're right there. There were footprints. I saw it.
You saw footprints?
Yes, I saw in the sheets. I saw it right there. I saw them. There's something in here. There's someone in here.
Sid, put that stupid thing on.
You're the one who bought it for me.
Who you gonna spray? Who?
The most interesting aspect of Whannell's update is the film's sociology. Which characters he chooses to do what. This Invisible Man has become a Me Too story resting on top of racial reassurance. It's the story of a white contemporary 1% dot-com marriage, a marriage story, if you will, which has moved beyond talking to terror. Significantly, her terror, signaled by the menacing score by Ben Walfish, is mitigated by the sanity of the single-parent African-American working-class family who tried to love the demons out of her. It's the black family that's not crazy. They know trouble. They're most equipped for it. James is a single cop dad. He's seen it all at work. He's lost his wife and the mother of his daughter, and he's willing to walk all the way up to the doors of his own perception and still be open to the presence of spooks in the attic of his friend's mind, if not in the attic of his house. Wannell's Invisible Man asks that you might think about the politics of believing women when they report a crime against them, no matter how crazy you think they are. The politics of Wannell's film is streamlined and oversimplified. There are differences between Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, and Woody Allen and their everyday counterparts in the real world. We're only just starting to grapple with where women have weight in this discussion. Count The Invisible Man as part of that. And I'm Harlan Jacobson.